You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi everyone, I am Martin Acuña and you're listening to Backstage Talk. Hello and welcome back. Today I am in the company of a performer that rose to stardom during the pandemic, if I may say. And he's been working his butt off as a digital content creator for the last year. I am here with JJ Neiman. Hey JJ, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm doing well, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm excited for this chat. I've been looking forward for this conversation for a long time, and the stars aligned and I could make it, and we both could make it today. So I'm really excited.
Me too.
I am going to let you introduce yourself for a bit before I start with all the Ratatouille questions I have today.
Yes, yes, we love Ratatouille. Hi, my name is JJ. I am a Broadway actor in New York City. I'm currently in North Carolina with my family, but I'll be back in New York soon. It's been a weird year not being in the city all the time because it's expensive. And and also, I didn't have an apartment lease, so that's why I haven't been up there. But anyway, I graduated from college in 2017. I went to Elon University in North Carolina, which has one of the best music theater programs in the country, if I do say so. I love my alma mater. I'm very proud to have gone there. I graduated and joined Book of Mormon a few days after graduating college. It was like one of those Cinderella story whirlwind experiences. I was a swing, covered seven roles in that, and I performed in Book of Mormon for 2.5 years and on Broadway. So during that time, also working on, you know, started teaching dance classes in the city, started working with the Broadway Collective, who I still coach with, and also was doing development and readings and workshops of a new musical called Bliss, which I most recently, that's the most recent live performance I got to do, which was at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle. We did our world premiere and pre-Broadway tryout, hoping to come to New York when things open back up and if they get a theater. So that was the last thing I did last January and February of 2020. And then ever since then, I've, you know, been in quarantine and content creating, like you said, was in Ratatouille, teaching, all those kinds of things.
I just gotta say, what is it with you guys from Elon that right after graduation are taking a plane to New York? Like a couple of weeks ago,
yes.
I interviewed Jake David Smith, and
yes,
he had the same story. Like, I was having like my Italian literature finals and got a call back for Mean Girls, but then also Disney Theatricals want me on an audition, and basically they moved my debut because I had graduation. Like, what the hell is going on with you guys at Elon?
So fierce. Wait, how do you know Jake? Did you know him before having him on the podcast?
No, I actually do a lot of network through Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook. So I basically contacted him through Instagram and was like, hey, you're a Disney prince. I want you on my
literally
podcast.
Yes, that is so crazy that you had him. So Jake and I went to school together for 2 years. He's 2 years below me. And you want to know the gag is, I was in his callback, I think his final callback for Frozen. I was in for the tour at the same time for a track that was going to be covering Olaf disclaimer, I am so glad I didn't get it because I made it all the way to the final like three and I had to do a puppeteering session, like literally was in Olaf Puppet in a studio. The carpal tunnel that I would have gotten, the arthritis in my wrists and hands, I literally was so sore for like days. I was like, there's no way that I could have done this. There's no way. The puppeteering, I have mad respect for anyone who does that. But it was amazing because it was Jake's, one of his first callbacks in New York. And I got to be there with him. I think it was his first dance callback. And I'm a dancer first. And so I was like helping him out in the callback. And I was like, I got you. We're going to work on this. And like, he freaking booked it. And then started, yeah, pretty shortly after. It's like one of those wonderful, I love that like network and community. But yeah, he had a very similar thing happen to him that I did.
I just love it. Like, I mean, I looked up for Elon to when I was looking for colleges, but and I really envy, like deep bad envy feeling for everyone that went to Elon.
It's a really special place for sure. I'm really fortunate. And it's only like 3 hours from where my family is. So that's kind of like how I heard about it was through other North Carolinians, not realizing the caliber of a program it is. But yeah, it's wonderful.
All right. So how did he start in musical theater?
So I kind of started, I mean, I always literally, if you ask anybody, like anyone in my family, I was singing and dancing gibberish before I could walk or talk. I was somehow dancing before I could walk. Like it was one of those kinds of kids that you're like, that's gotta be a performer. And I kind of have a lineage of it. Like my grandparents and oddly enough, my grandma, so my dad's mom made him promise her that he would never let one of his kids go into show business because I think her grandma was like a Broadway dancer and had some rough experiences. And she was like, don't let any of your kids do it. It's a crazy industry. And so I came along and he was like, I don't know, I guess, you know. And so basically my parents actually ran their own children's theater company back when I was like in diapers. And I have three older sisters. They're 6, 8, 10 years older than me. And so they were all doing shows and I was in the playpen with a babysitter, you know, at the rehearsals. And they only did that theater company for a few years, but I was always surrounded by music and dance and they encouraged all of us to do shows. And so as soon as I was old enough, you had to be 8 years old, back where we lived in Annapolis, Maryland at the time, that's where I was born and grew up for the first 10 years of my life. And you had to be 8 years old to do the children's theater shows there. So as soon as I turned 8, I auditioned for the show. I played, I got cast as Avery, the bratty little brother in Charlotte's Web, and did that show. And then we moved to North Carolina. And once we moved here, there were tons of community theaters. Obviously the schools do shows and stuff. So I literally was doing theater year round. I didn't really train that much. Like a lot of people go to camps or intensives. I didn't do any of that. I literally just did shows year round. And that's kind of how I learned my skills until I went to college.
That is awesome. I'm not going to ask you how you got to Broadway because you just said that your story is very similar to Jake's. I mean, it was Elon.
And we have the same agent too, actually. We're CGS. Signed with the same agent. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love them. I don't know anyone there, but I love them. Like they represent the best people in the business. So you went to Elon, then you jumped directly to Book of Mormon as a swing. Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons of being a swing? Because I find that under studies or swings are the most difficult thing you can do in a show. Like, like memorizing 7 to 13 tracks, it's just mind blowing for me.
It's crazy.
I can barely do with mine.
Right. And like, there's shows like Six, the musical, that all of the swings or alternates, whatever you want to call them, offstage covers, they play all the leads. Like, they play all of them. People often say that swings are, like, the MVPs of a show or are the unsung heroes. And a lot of times, honestly, not to toot my own horn as a swing, but a lot of times are the most talented people in the cast because they can play everything. And that's not to discount a lot of times the kind of type and skill set and everything it takes to play a lead 8 shows a week is its own skill set. And those kinds of people thrive. Like the people, like I think of course, another Ilana alum, Wilbert Weed. She is not the most versatile performer. She is incredible, but she is going to get the roles that are absolutely perfect for her. And that is her, that is who she is. And she's made, carved a path for herself and roles for herself in the industry that no one else really can play and can touch. Like Veronica and Heathers and Janice and Mean Girls, like she, those roles are her. You can't take her out of those roles. And so swings, we are kind of more malleable. And that's something I've always kind of, like prided myself in being, is being someone who kind of can do everything. And people are always like, are you a stronger singer or a stronger dancer? And I'm like, I genuinely feel like I'm equal across the board. And so while there might not be a ton of place for me in movie musicals because the dancers are lip syncing and the singers are not dancing and they're in the recording studios, that's where it gets a little tricky and I have a little saltiness about it. But it, on Broadway, that's where the triple threat, like you have to be one to be a swing and a lot of times be an ensemble member because they're usually covering leads too. So the pros and cons, I would say the pro is that it's incredibly satisfying and a gratifying thing to do. And it keeps it really fresh because when you're in a show for 2.5 years, mama, woo, you need it to be spiced up. You need to get to go on for different roles. And like, it really does keep it so fun. You interact with different people. You're interacting with different dressers, doing different quick changes and features, singing different harmonies. For someone like me who loves that kind of a challenge, I loved that. The con is some days you don't want a challenge. Some days you're like, let me just step on stage and do my thing and like be comfortable and get to like not check out. Never, never check out. But sometimes it's nice to just go on stage and know exactly what you're doing and not have to freak out. And you're just like, you get to feel like you're just one of everyone else. And so you get a taste of that as a swing when you're sometimes on for a role for 1 week or 2 weeks at a time and you have, cause someone's on vacation and you're like, I know I'm getting to do this role for a whole week. It's the best feeling because you're like, oh, I get to just like chill and like have fun and like do my thing. So, yeah.
I love it. Talk to us a little bit about your experience as a swing in the Book of Mormon.
Well, being in a show that had been running for years at that point, I think it had been running for 5 and a half years by the time I joined. So it was a well-oiled machine, which made it so easy to learn everything because the people, you know, the dance captain and the music director and everyone was so good at like teaching us everything. And it was very much like, this is what it is. And you just kind of fit into it. And I love clear guidelines. I love that. I also love being creative, but I love when someone's just like, this is exactly what you have to do. And there's no question about like, what do I do here? Which creating new shows, swings who have to be in the room when you're creating a new show and everything's changing every day, that's harder, I think. But yeah, I mean, being in the Book of Mormon was so fun. And also because it had been running for so long, they were really lenient with giving people personal days, vacations, sick days. And there were pros and cons to that because sometimes people had been in the show for years. So they were like, sometimes would just call in sick, like, you know, a half an hour before the show. And you're like, can you not do that? Because I would love to have a little more notice, please. But also at the same time, it was great because I literally barely ever a week went by, a full 8-show week went by where I wasn't on. That probably only happened like 2 weeks out of like the 2.5 years I was there.
That is awesome.
I was on every week. Yeah.
That is awesome. I mean, you, and besides all the thrill of covering things, you just get to be on stage. And as you said, having a clear guideline about how to do things.
Oh, yeah. And it was also really nice also because sometimes, you know, you get paid pretty much the same to sit backstage. So some days, I mean, I got through every season of Drag Race during my time there. I started from season one and I went all the way through, and that became like, you know, and it's really fun because, you know, there's a lot of standbys and swings and stuff. So certain shows, we would all go to the standbys room and they had a projector there and we would stream, like, do Drag Race viewings or watch movies or play card games. Like, it's really fun once you learn everything and you feel really comfortable that you could jump on at a moment's notice. It's really fun to get to, like, hang out with people backstage.
Awesome. So you... No, changing question right now. have you developed any new show since Book of Mormon?
Besides Bliss? Bliss was the only one, really, I mean, kind of Ratatouille. I was a part of that. But Bliss was the most, because I did a month-long development lab back in October of 2018, and then I did a reading of it in the following May, and then got asked to do the Out of Town. So that was really fun because the choreographer of that, a lot of it was a little bit more contemporary style, and he does more classic Broadway, so he kind of relied on some of us who have a little bit more experience with hip-hop and contemporary dance to fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. honestly. And so that was really fun because a lot of my pieces of choreography that I worked on, and us boys, we'd just be like, okay, let's go to the side and, like, learn a little eight count, and we'd show it to them and they'd be like, great. So a lot of my choreo is in the show, actually.
Awesome. That is great. So Ratatouille, you kind of originated a role in there, but let's get at the top of it. How did you end up in Ratatouille?
So I was one of the people who definitely was, like, seeing the trend happening. I made a few videos, like, as soon as I heard that the whole chorale arrangement of the Ratatouille, you know, the one that Dan Mertz left, the arranger, did for a TikTok. As soon as I saw his video, I was like, oh my God, I have to use this and make a video imagining rehearsing Ratatouille the musical on Broadway. Because I had made similar ones with, like, a version of WAP by Cardi B that was like a chorale one, and same with the Me Pants is Zoo. Like, I love that TikTok just finds these sounds and they, like, make whole trends out of it that doesn't make any sense. But yeah, so I made some videos, became friends with Dan on social media because of that. And then when I saw that it was announced that it was being turned into a whole concert, you know, a whole benefit, I literally messaged him and I was like, hey, I would love to be part of this. Let me know if you need any singers. And he was like, yes, we'd love to have you. Let me connect you with the music director. Boom, connected. And so to anyone listening, always ask for what you want and always never be afraid of that. As long as you're not being, like, cringy or it's out of place, don't be afraid to just say, hey, I'm available if you need anything. Because you never know when they'll be like, yeah, we do. And at the same time, actually, I was reached out to by the choreographer Eleanor Scott. She slid into my DMs on Instagram, and she's a TikTok creator as well. She had seen my videos. I had actually auditioned for her several times in New York and have always loved her and her work. And so, yeah, she reached out to me and I was like, yeah, I would love to be a part of this. So that's how it happened, and kind of how it came to be.
That is great. And how was that, like, process on how you were rehearsing online with people distancing, like, everyone in their own home?
Yeah, oh, it was it was chaos. To be perfectly honest, I was like, are y'all sure y'all want to do this? And they set the date, we're like, January 1st, it's going to be streaming. And I was like, are y'all sure you want to, like, who decided this? Because not only, so they, a lot of it, like, was like a trickle down effect, because when, you know, they only had 4 weeks total to put it together, but, like, two of those weeks were spent completely arranging and orchestrating. Then they had to get together the orchestra, put all of that together, write the script, then send us all of the information. So we were sent all the information on, like, the Sunday or Monday before Christmas. So it was, like, the 21st. I had two Zoom rehearsals. So I had one with the music team. They sent us the sheet music and they said, okay, so cut off on three here, cut off on four here. JJ, you take tenor one, you know, you take tenor two, like, da 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 da. Divvied up the solos. They were like, you take the solo, you take the solo. And we kind of, like, we were sent tracks, kind of, but we had to, like, plunk out our notes, so thank God I kind of know how to sight read, and I was, like, plunking out my harmonies. I was like, I hope that I'm cutting off on the right time, and we literally recorded with our own mics on our own into, like, GarageBand, just, like, raw audio, and that was it. I mean, like, that's basically, you know, and then we also had to film videos of us lip syncing, and we had to send everything in. We had 2 days to send everything in, so it was due on the 23rd of December. And yeah, a lot of times we had to record multiple vocal parts. So it was really weird because there was no way to like rehearse together. So we didn't know how it would sound us all together. And then for the choreo, I had a Zoom rehearsal with the choreographer. They taught us everything in like an hour and a half. And then we had 2 days to send in all of our videos. They sent us the rat ears and chef's hats. And they were like, all right, send the videos. And we had to like, it was just very much like we were sending our own raw vocals and videos out into the ether and had no idea how it would come together, what it would look like. I mean, we were just like, I was like crossing my fingers and praying. I was like so nervous. When the debut night happened, I was like, my heart was racing. I was like, I hope that this is good. Like, I don't even know. And it ended up being really, really wonderful. My whole family, we watched it together. Yeah, it was great.
So that's when they gave you that amazing belt solo. It wasn't in the opening number or the closing number.
It was the bows, the mega mix.
Yeah,
at the end.
Yeah. I loved it. I remember streaming it too, and I enjoyed it a lot. And it was really fun because I didn't expect you being there. And I remember watching it with like, hey, I've seen this dude over in my Instagram. I don't know his name.
Yeah.
And I don't know, right at this particular moment, I don't know who he is, but I've seen him somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, well, Instagram exploded with all the Ratatouille posts.
Yeah. Yep.
That is awesome. I mean, it is a one in a life experience being part of the first streaming we had since COVID hit in the middle of a pandemic, and like the stars aligned for it to be a revolutionary show made out of social media.
Oh yeah, and like the fact that it was the first crowdsourced musical ever, like, it really just, the moral of the story, anyone can cook, literally applies to this. It's literally like, anyone can write a musical, why not try? You can try. And there were people around the country working on this. There were people, 17-year-olds and people who don't have degrees in music, writing amazing, that somehow like was cohesive, like somehow ended up being a cohesive work that's better than some of the stuff I hear in New York. No cap. Like, there is some crunchy, crunchy old people stuff happening in New York. Not that old people can't write musicals, but like a lot of it is dated. It's just, they don't take risks on new artists and new writers. And also like, we're seeing also during this time, like a whole lot of like awareness with Broadway for Racial Justice and We See You White American Theater. And like, there is a race issue, like as wonderful as theater is and as wonderful as Broadway is, there is a race issue. There are not enough opportunities given to marginalized voices and just diverse voices so that you have people working on your shows. And so I think that was amazing that all around there were risks being taken on every corner with new up-and-coming artists all around the world, and it was just so cool. And I hope that it inspires people to be a little bit more creative moving forward and take chances on new people, and also make theater more accessible to people who can't come to New York. I think we're gonna see a lot more of that. So I'm so proud that I got to be part of a small, you know, snippet in that I think moving forward will make a big impact.
But trust me, I think that the Ratatouille being a TikTok musical is a landmark, and it made a mark in musical theater history.
Like, yeah.
Not only because we're in the middle of a pandemic, but because all the other things you just said.
Yeah.
And people will look back to it like this was the start of a trend.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Easy
as
that. And I think it's kind of a something that might not be able to be replicated. I feel like people are going to try to replicate how it came to be, but like you can't force a trend. It just has to happen. And somehow this trend happened. So I can't wait to see what the next one is, though. Bridgerton obviously is in its own realm because it's, you know, specific writers working on it. But seeing how that's taken off is so cool, too.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm intrigued about is how will this change when we are back in the theater? Like when we can go physically to a theater, how will this social media stuff will impact new shows?
I hope that it kind of works in tandem. I think they can both coexist because, like I said, a lot of people don't live in New York or have the means to go to New York every single year and see shows. So I think shows will be smart moving forward to incorporate social media more. We obviously saw TikTok strongly boosted the popularity of Six the Musical and Beetlejuice and truly changed the game. And I think we're seeing that. And now, you know, it can blow up a song like Driver's License by Olivia Rodrigo and blow up her song to being the number one stream song of the year because it was a TikTok trend. Like, it's just really cool to see that. So I think if shows don't utilize that, they're dumb. But also they have to do it in a smart way. I, of course, hope as a content creator online and a Broadway actor that I'm able to somehow make it work, that I can find a way to marry the two, because I would love to help shows, you know, help boost shows, and especially ones that I'm in. And, you know, I've talked to some friends of mine who are also creators online, and we're like, that's something that you'll need to get written into a contract, because if people are coming to see a Broadway show because you have a million followers on TikTok, that is a selling point, and that should be worked into your contract in some way.
It's influencer marketing in the end.
Yes, for sure.
I want to move a little bit into JJ, the teacher. How long have you been teaching dance or musical theater?
Well, I really started while I was at Elon. We do a lot of student showcases, student cabarets. Every year we have Collage and Grand Night, which are completely student-directed, music directed, choreographed, arranged, everything. And we put on like an hour and a half show of just various musical theater numbers and all of it. It's like the best night of the year. It literally just happened the other night, and they did a streaming one this year, of course, but it was so good. But I choreographed numbers for that, at least like one to three numbers for that every single year. So I knew that I loved running rehearsals, loved choreographing, teaching, kind of in that realm. And I got to dip my toes into that in like the summers between my semesters, because I would work at like a children's theater here and there and teach a week-long camp or things like that. And then once I got to New York, started teaching my own dance classes. And that was really just to be like getting my friends into the studio with me and just being like, hey, I choreographed this piece and I want to like work on it and have everyone learn it. And I started doing those like once a month, once every other month. And I called them Jazzing with JJ. So I can't wait to do that again, like in person. And then I started working with Broadway Collective. I just saw that they were accepting applications for feedback coaches, and Broadway Collective operates mostly online, actually. So it was actually set up for success already before the pandemic happened. And I started kind of slowly working with them, just dance coaching here and there. Then I started mentoring and working for their summer camps and basically having 10 students or so a week that I was accountable for. And they were like my students to always check in with and mentor them. Then I started working with their pre-screen program and working with students that were auditioning for colleges, and we were helping them professionally film and prepare for college auditions. So I was their dance coach, and I've done that 2 years in a row now. So now I'm like pretty much, I'm not full-time employed with them because it definitely, you know, it's just, it depends. It's like a week at a time sometimes, but I'm really, really thankful to be consistently employed with them. I think they're a wonderful business. And because of kind of me having this platform on social media, Ratatouille kind of in a weird way bolstered that even more, because people kind of recognized me from something too if they hadn't seen me in a show before. And now I like am reached out to by all of these online virtual classes or programs, and I'm teaching my own, you know, students through Broadway Plus and Artists and Beyond. There's all of these platforms through the pandemic that have come about that you can coach one-on-one virtually. I'm teaching master classes every single week of my own choreography or choreography that I've learned in New York and different Broadway shows. I'm literally teaching a Ratatouille tap workshop tomorrow. Like, yeah, there's always something every week that I'm doing, and it literally fills me with so much joy. And I'm working with students all over the world. Like, literally, I taught a class this past weekend, and I was with students in Latin America and Europe, in the UK, in California, New York, Oregon, in Spain. Like, it was like Germany. It was amazing that I was working with people all over the world. And I was like, this is so cool. And if a pandemic hadn't happened, I don't know if these platforms would have existed, or if they would have happened this way. And I think even when we get back to normal life, they will still thrive and exist because it connects people that you wouldn't necessarily be connected with otherwise.
Yeah. What's the best and the worst of being a teacher?
The best part, I mean, connecting with students and that just brings me so much joy. The worst part, I mean, honestly, I don't really have a worst part of teaching in general. It takes a lot of energy for sure. But I think the hardest thing is doing online, is sometimes with a dance class, it's just like you need to be with people in a dance studio being like hyping each other up and being like, yes, yes. And it is really hard to give specific dance corrections and adjustments over Zoom. It's just not the same thing. So that it has been an adjustment, and there's pros and cons to it.
Awesome. I want to move on into JJ as the content creator. So when the pandemic hit, you basically moved a little bit into content creation over social media. What's your creative process?
My creative process is sometimes improv. Honestly, I keep a notes app on my phone of all of the ideas, because sometimes you will wake up at like 6 a.m. to go to the bathroom and you're like, wait, I have this amazing idea, or like I had a dream about this and I need to write it down. And I think all artists are like that in some way. That's kind of, to be honest, I was making videos when I was really young, like literally when I was in like fifth grade. And I started YouTube channels. They were really crunchy videos, but I was making them. I was just like, my sisters would buy me wigs, and we would play dress up all the time, and they would buy me wigs so that I could make my videos. And I would just make random skits and really silly things. And I stopped doing it kind of my junior year of high school because I just thought it was cringy. I was getting cyberbullied a little bit, like people do. The internet can be brutal, and I was just not prepared for it. I was still closeted. I was at a private Christian high school. I was like, let me just take a step back, and I got really busy. And when you're in college doing musical theater, mama, you have no time. So I really was like, just, I didn't have time anymore, but I forgot how much I loved it, and I had learned all those editing skills and everything back then. And so once this pandemic happened and I started seeing TikTok and what the platform was, and I was like, this is really fun and really funny. And it just kind of like blossomed into, like, I realized how much of a theater community there was on there. And I was like, maybe I should just start making videos and like see what happens. Like, I found my old wigs in my closet when I was cleaning out my room. I was back in my childhood bedroom. I was like, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then it kind of just slowly turned into what it is now. It really started taking off when I started doing those Broadway mic on-off videos, those POV Broadway actor videos back in like August or September of last year.
And I love them. They're so funny. Like, I mean, I love your dancing videos, but your Broadway POV videos are just hilarious.
Thank you. I think a lot of people also relate to them because it kind of like, it peels back the curtain a little bit of the elusive elite, like Broadway, like, da, da, da. And it's like, no, we're a bunch of goofballs, or at least like the good ones are. Some people take themselves too seriously, but I don't have time for that. And I like to have fun and kiki and like, for anyone who's done one show even in their life at a school, you can still relate to that feeling of being backstage or on stage and like the kind of chaos that ensues. So I love making those.
I love them. Tricky question. Do you follow trends or start new ones?
Ooh!
Because because you just said that with Ratatouille, you saw the trend starting and you jumped on it.
So, fully. I think you need to kind of continue using the app and watching things to keep up with it, because sometimes like something like a trend happens and you see it and you're like, wait, I know the perfect thing to do to this and to put a spin on it. That makes it, I think that's the important thing. If you're only following trends and not putting your own uniqueness and spin on it, your video will not do well. I mean, maybe it will because it's a fluke, but in my experience, the things that do well are when you put your own creative, unique spin on it. That's kind of a twist. And people are like, oh my God, that's brilliant. And so sometimes those things are hard to come by, but just continue brainstorming and just putting it out there. But yeah, I think with some of the things, I do start the trends in the Broadway POV videos. I think I was the first person to really do anything like that.
Awesome. So for you, what is creativity and how do you boost it? And more in the pandemic craziness in which like we felt that creativity has been cut short.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people like myself like went through some, you know, depressing times, and it still is hard. Like there are some really hard days where you're just like, what am I doing? Like, where's my industry? And also, why are people going to, thousands of people are going to stadiums to watch football with no masks on, but I can't freaking do what I do for a living? And it just is like, the support for the arts has kind of been like a little non-existent when in a time where everyone is turning to artists. That's all we're doing is watching things and listening to music. And anyway, I can go on about that. I don't need to because I know you get it and everyone listening probably gets it too. But creativity, I mean, is different for everyone. And I think for me, creativity is like creating things out of joy. You can also create things out of hardship too and out of pain. That's also where we get like Adele and her albums, you know, like a lot of the great musicians, their creativity comes out of pain too. So in a pandemic, in really hard times, it's forcing us to look elsewhere or create our own joy, create our own, you know, create what that is for ourselves. And I think, you know, trying to hold yourself back or hide your light under a bushel because you're worried about it being cringy or you're worried about someone not thinking it's funny or not good enough is the antithesis of what you should be doing, because I spent so much of my life doing that and trying to cultivate an image for myself of like, this is who I am. And like, okay, well, I might be gay, but I'm not super feminine, or I might be like, I might like theater, but I don't want to be too outward liking theater because I don't want people to think I'm a nerd or a geek for liking that. No, mama, no, cut that out. And I've been trying to teach myself that, because the more that I put myself out there, I'm seeing that people respond well to authenticity and to what you think is funny and what brings you joy. And you don't need to worry about the people who don't get it or the people who won't like it or won't think it's funny. There are a lot of people who won't understand my theater content and won't think it's funny, and that's not my business because it's not for them. Then they just won't follow me, and it's fine. But there are a lot of people who will relate and will think it's funny. So don't bog yourself down and let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and don't let that fear prevent you from creating something and putting yourself out there, because you never know what's going to happen and who's going to see it and respond to it.
I love it. That's the best advice. That was my next question. My next question, and you just answered it.
Oh, good.
So, what's coming next for you as a creator?
Well, there are some like somewhat fun things in the works. I actually ended up during this time, through social media, signing with a manager in LA. So that is really exciting that I'm working with someone who's helping me with brand content and all those things, and also starting to get me some TV and film auditions. So I would love to, you know, live in LA at some point in my life. I got a choreography gig this summer, so I'm going to be choreographing my first full musical in Montana. So that's exciting as well. And yeah, I'm kind of just continuing to put myself out there and see what kind of happens, and continuing doing my teaching. I really would love to be back in New York, though, and kind of in a studio creating again with people. So I'm excited at least this summer that I'm going to get 4 or 5 weeks of getting to teach and choreograph and safely be with other humans. Yeah, I'm really excited for that.
I love it. I love it. And I'm a bit envious about it because you have a lot of jobs and you have a lot of work in front of you. So that's great. And I love it.
Thank you.
So before we go, where can people find you, find more about you, look at your content or book a class or just get in touch with you?
Totally. Well, yeah, so my social media is at JJ Neiman, N-I-E-M-A-N-N. That's my TikTok and Instagram. On my link tree on those socials, you can find the links to book one-on-one sessions or coachings with me. And I'm pretty good at posting on my Instagram stories whenever I'm doing masterclasses or workshops. And then, yeah, you can find my website is my name as well, jjneiman.com. And you can contact me on a form there if you are interested in anything or just want some advice. I'm always available and I try to be good about responding to DMs and responding to questions. So, yeah, that's that.
I love it. Okay, surprise questions before we go.
Okay, I'm excited.
First one, ballet, tap, or jazz?
Jazz.
Okay, so you're, yeah, of course, jazz with JJ.
Jazzing with JJ, jazzing yeah, with period. JJ.
Stephen Sondheim or Andrew Lloyd Webber? You can say neither.
Gonna get butchered if I say neither. I know people are obsessed with both of them, and I just am not. I am like, give me a Newsies, give me Hairspray. I am not like Sondheim's musicals are a little too Pattersong singer actor storytell for me, but I would have to say Sondheim. I do prefer his works better, probably.
So you're more a contemporary guy than a classic guy.
I am, that is true. Yeah, and Andrew Lloyd Webber has some weird things out there. I'm sorry, he did Cats, so I can't say Andrew Lloyd Webber. My friend is wacky. He's a genius, but a wacky genius.
I agree with you. I totally agree. Okay, last question. Top 5 favorite musical theater shows.
Ooh, top 5. Okay. I have to say Hairspray is my favorite. Newsies is one of the ones I saw that was like, I saw and I was like, I have to do musical theater. Hamilton, I think, is a perfect show. It's a masterpiece. Oh gosh, I try to not go towards like the heavy ones. I just like, I don't know, I'm an escapist kind of person. But I really loved The Prom and The Prom movie. So I would say that. Even though it has its flaws, love that. In the Heights for sure. I cannot wait for the movie. Oh my God, it is such an underrated musical. It is so good.
I love it, and I'm really excited about the movie coming on June this year, so.
Watching the trailer, so I was like, game over.
Same. And what I love is that, like, the original Broadway cast recording has the traditional quote unquote Broadway sound with mm-hmm. hip hop and Latin music, but mm-hmm. on the trailers you can listen to like a revamped pop sound of the score, and I like it. It's yes. like this is gonna be uh-huh. a hit.
Excited. People are also like, so many people do not know the show well just because like it was on Broadway like 9 years ago or so, and it was before Lin-Manuel had the name he has now, so I think people are gonna be so shook and not know what to expect, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, I love it. Well, JJ, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank Thank you so much for having me and for some wonderful questions. You are so sweet, and this has been such a blast. See ya.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.